Chapter 8. CIA Headquarters, Langley, Virginia, USA. The intercom on Irene Kennedy's desk buzzed, and she picked up immediately.
Dr. Kennedy, Senator Farris just arrived.
Thank you. Tell him I'll be just a moment. She pulled up the security feed of her outer office and examined the man walking awkwardly toward a wing-backed chair. The notoriously tardy politician was right on time, and the large taxpayer-funded entourage he normally traveled with was conspicuously absent. Carl Farris had been consolidating his power in the Senate since he was in college, finally rising to the chairmanship of the Judiciary Committee. Surrounded exclusively with yes-men and lobbyists, his ego had expanded to proportions unusual even by congressional standards. It gave him a gift for pontificating convincingly on any subject, ingratiating him with his constituents who tended to prefer simplicity and certainty to the more nuanced arguments of experts. The intelligence and military communities, though, saw him for what he was, an ignorant and ultimately dangerous blowhard. He sat staring straight ahead, foregoing his normal demands from her staff for everything from coffee to the removal of a spot from his tie. It was a side of the influential senator that she had never seen, but that wasn't entirely unexpected. Farris had spent the last 2 years building a web of disgruntled CIA, FBI, and State Department employees to help him in his quest to bring the agency under his control. Combined with information fed to him by a contact high up in Pakistan's ISI, he'd been attempting to assemble enough damning evidence to hold public hearings designed to raise his own stature at the cost of America's security. Those plans had come to a grinding halt when she and the FBI had wiretapped one of his little cabal's meetings and arrested a number of his co-conspirators. "How does he look?" She glanced up at Mitch Rapp, who was sitting at one end of the conference table centered in her office.
"Nervous, but reasonably healthy."
His eyes narrowed. The CIA possessed information on heart problems that the increasingly overweight senator was keeping quiet in hopes that he would be his party's next presidential nominee. She was convinced that the first thing Rapp did every morning was check his news feeds in hopes of finding a story about Carl Farris dropping dead. "I'm going to say again that I'd rather you weren't part of this meeting, Mitch. Based on what we've learned about the Rickman situation, it's time for a de-escalation between us and the senator."
"I'm staying."
Kennedy sighed quietly. Farris was scared, and that was something she could use. Panic, though, was a very different emotional state. It could create an environment where the politician turned desperate and unpredictable. She reached for the intercom, resigned to the fact that nothing she could say would change Rapp's mind.
"Please send him in."
Farris entered a moment later, but froze when he saw Rapp.
"What's he doing here?"
"Please close the door behind you, Senator."
"Are you crazy? He threatened to kill me. He said he was going to sneak into my house and—"
"Senator," Kennedy said, allowing the volume of her voice to rise slightly, "close the door." He hesitated, but finally recognized that he had no choice. Kennedy indicated toward the conference table, and Farris kept a wary eye on Rapp as he took the chair farthest from him. For her part, Kennedy remained at her desk. It would be seen by the politician as the same power play he himself used daily, but the truth was simpler. She was repulsed by the man, and preferred to maintain physical distance whenever possible. Kennedy didn't immediately speak, letting the politician sweat for almost a minute. He had undoubtedly gone over this meeting in his head 1,000 times by now, crafting an exhaustive script of the lies and spin he was so well known for. "I'd like you to tell us about your relationship with Pakistani intelligence," Kennedy said finally.
"I don't have one," he protested. "This is ridiculous."
"Then you're telling me the emails we found on your maid's computer were hers? That she was corresponding with Akhtar Durrani, the deputy director of the ISI's external wing?"
"No, of course not. But I've never met the man, I swear. He started a dialogue with me and made a number of accusations about illegal CIA activity."
"And you lapped them up," Rapp said. "Figured they'd sound great on TV."
"Absolutely not. But there were too many allegations to ignore."
Farris finally conjured enough courage to look directly at Rapp.
"Money diverted into Swiss bank accounts? People murdered?"
Rapp leaned forward over the table,
you sit there on Capitol Hill and tell us to set up a coalition government in Afghanistan. You completely ignore our warnings and force us to bring in every scumbag terrorist, warlord, and drug dealer in the region. If it stays together, you'll take the credit, but if it blows up in everybody's face like we've been telling you, you'll act shocked and hold hearings to deflect the blame. The CIA must work within the law, Ferris almost shouted. You answer to the government, the elected representatives of the American people. My ass, Rapp said. You're like a four-year-old. When you're scared, you cling to my leg, crying and demanding that I protect you by whatever means necessary. But when I succeed, you start to feel safe again. Then you want to show everyone how brave and independent you are. This is a country of laws, Ferris exclaimed, obviously unable to come up with anything more original or to the point. Why didn't you come to me with these suspicions? Kennedy asked, hoping to regain control of the meeting. Rapp looked like he was about to explode, and that wouldn't be constructive. Not yet. What? Ferris said, having trouble tracking for a moment. Why? Because some of your people were implicated? I was concerned that you might lack objectivity. I see. In that case, can I assume you discussed this with the president? He looked down at the table. My inquiry hadn't progressed to the point that it would be worth the president's time. She nodded. I see. And what do you know about Akhtar Durrani, Senator? He was a respected member of the Pakistani intelligence community and has served with distinction at the ISI for... So you're not aware, for instance, that he was the man responsible for hiding Osama bin Laden from us? Ferris fell silent and just stared at her with a stunned expression. Obviously, the mental script he'd prepared didn't include a response to that particular piece of information. I don't believe you. Rapp slid a file across the table with enough force that Ferris was barely quick enough to stop it from slamming into his stomach. He opened it and paged through, hands shaking visibly. Why have you kept this secret? Why haven't you told... Because we were going to hold it over his head, you moron, Rapp said. But I have to admit that the tone of your emails isn't particularly skeptical, Kennedy said. In fact, you seem to be strongly siding with Durrani. I wonder what the American people would think of your close relationship with one of Al-Qaeda's strongest supporters. Ferris closed the folder but remained silent. For the first time in his long career, he seemed to have run out of things to say. It's my understanding that you're going to be part of an upcoming congressional fact-finding mission to Pakistan? In preparation for the state dinner, Ferris muttered. He was referring to a reception hosted by the Pakistani president in honor of a new billion-dollar humanitarian aid package to his country. Ferris, along with Secretary of State Sonny Wicker, would be two of the American dignitaries attending. Normally, the senator would consider this kind of preparatory trip beneath him, and it seemed likely that he'd been planning to use it as an opportunity to meet personally with Durrani. Now that the man was dead, Kennedy couldn't figure out why Ferris hadn't canceled. She'd considered ordering him not to go, but then decided she could learn more by giving him a bit of rope. Who are you scheduled to meet with, Senator?
No one in particular, he said a little too emphatically. I'm just following the itinerary set up by the State Department.
Kennedy considered revealing more of what she knew about his activities, but it seemed unnecessary at this juncture. Her point had been made. Maybe including Mitch Rapp in the meeting had been beneficial after all. You've had a long and illustrious career, Senator, but continuing to escalate your vendetta against the CIA is dangerous to both the country's security and to you personally. He gave a contrite nod. Then I can look forward to an improved relationship with your office?
Of course. My only concern is the safety and prosperity of America and my constituents.
Rapp laughed out loud, but she remained serene. Then, enjoy your trip to Islamabad, Senator. He was unaccustomed to being dismissed and just sat there with a confused expression until Rapp spoke.
She means get the fuck out, dipshit.
That set him into motion. He stood, took one last look at the file on the desk, and then hurried to the door. Rapp waited until it was closed to speak again.
I looked at the official schedule for his trip.
Just another excuse for a bunch of congressmen to ride around in limos and go shopping.
Maybe.
You think it's more?
He's a man used to power, Mitch. Is his ego really going to allow him to subordinate himself? To admit that he's lost this battle?
If he's smart, it will.
But he's not. He's a good politician. Like you're fond of pointing out, there's a difference.
If we're going to make a play for him, we should do it while he's over there. It'll be easier to cover up. We could make it look like a heart attack. He paused and smiled, in a way that made even her feel a little uncomfortable. Or we could go for irony, make him the victim of a phony terrorist attack.
I didn't hear any of that.
No? Well, hear this, Irene. If you want to watch him and try to turn him into your lapdog, fine. Right now, Carl Ferris is just a pathetic joke to me. But when I stop laughing, he stops breathing.